We've already covered the basics of photosynthesis. That is, the basics of conventional photosynthesis, which is what happens in C3 plants, which is most plants. But remember, I was talking about photorespiration, which is a problem. Photorespiration is when Rubisco operates as an oxygenase rather than as a carboxylase. Remember, it's ribulose bisphosphase, carboxylase, oxygenase. So the enzyme can accept either oxygen or carbon dioxide. Well, the plant wants it to be carbon dioxide because it wants to incorporate another carbon, right? Ribulose bisphosphate gets carbon dioxide. That's a six-carbon compound that splits into two, three-carbon compounds, which are 3-phosphoglycerate, right? That's what the plant wants to happen. But I said that the affinity for Rubisco, I mean, the affinity of Rubisco for oxygen is even higher than for carbon dioxide. So if they're both present, oxygen usually wins out. And that creates a 5-carbon intermediate that is problematic because it's not part of the cycle. It has to be taken elsewhere and dealt with, which not only doesn't make any sugar for the plant, but costs it energy in dealing with converting it back to something that can go get back into the cycle. So there are two major groups of plants that have evolved strategies to deal with this problem of photorespiration. And one of those is, one of those groups of plants make up what we call the C4 plants as opposed to the C3 plants. Well, in a C3 plant, as we see on slide 15, this is a conventional plant. A leaf, which is the primary organ for photosynthesis, is like a sandwich, basically, where there are epidermal layers, like the slices of bread, and then inside, making up the sandwich, are mesophyll cells. The mesophyll cells are the cells in which most of the photosynthesis takes place. And so that's where the Calvin cycle, which of course is part of photosynthesis, takes place. All right. The problem is that those mesophyll cells are very close to the surface, which is where oxygen diffuses into the cell through stomata, which are openings that have to be open in order to let CO2 in. Well, they also let O2 in, right? And that's when you get into the problem of photorespiration. So C4 plants have evolved a way to separate some processes into different compartments. It's a spatial separation of steps in the process. And so they have mesophyll cells, just like C3 plants do, that are right near the surface, top and bottom of the leaf, and that are therefore exposed to O2 and CO2 the same way. But those mesophyll cells are not the cells where the Calvin cycle operates in C4 plants. Instead, they have an additional layer of cells deeper in the thickness of the leaf toward the interior, which are called bundle sheath cells, these darker green ones. And it's in the bundle sheath cells where Calvin cycle takes place. So just knowing that basic anatomy, let's go to the 16th slide then and look in at detail of just one of each of these cells. This is the top of the slide is the surface of the leaf. So that's where the oxygen, the CO2 are. This is a mesophyll cell of a C4 plant. And like I said, that's not where the Calvin cycle is operating. But that's where the carbon dioxide gets fixed temporarily in a C4 plant. So in a C4 plant, the carbon dioxide gets fixed temporarily into a different organic compound that's not part of the Calvin cycle. All right? Look what we have here. Phosphoenolpyruvate. Phosphoenolpyruvate you should recognize as a... Well, where do you recognize it from? Glycolysis. It's the penultimate intermediate in glycolysis. It gets turned into pyruvate in the final step. Step 10 of glycolysis turns phosphoenolpyruvate into pyruvate. Well, here it's being used for a totally different reason. Phosphoenolpyruvate can accept CO2 with the help of an enzyme. That enzyme, descriptively enough, is called phosphoenolpyruvate carboxylase, or PEP carboxylase. That's what HS1 represents here. Okay. So instead of ribulose bisphosphate, which would normally accept the carbon dioxide, it's phosphoenolpyruvate that does. And when that happens, it actually dephosphorylates it as well, but it carboxylates it, and we end up with oxaloacetate, which you should also recognize, right? That's a member of the citric acid cycle. Here it's doing a totally different job. Okay, the oxaloacetate then gets transported into the chloroplast of the mesophyll cell. And it gets transformed into malate, which is the deprotonated form of malic acid, right? Actually, transformation of oxaloacetate into malate is exactly the reverse of what happens in the citric acid cycle. Malate gets turned into oxaloacetate at the start-finish line of citric acid cycle. Here it's being reversed for a totally different reason, though. Anyway, the malate is carrying the carbon dioxide, basically. That's the purpose of this. All right? The reason this works so nicely is that, unlike Rubisco, PEP carboxylase has no affinity for oxygen, so only carbon dioxide will work. And therefore, it doesn't matter that oxygen is here near the surface of the leaf. It just won't get incorporated. Only carbon dioxide does. But the PEP carboxylase doesn't work in the Calvin cycle. It just works to get carbon dioxide temporarily incorporated into an intermediate, which is then going to be sent to a different cell. Okay? Well, that carbon dioxide is part of malate at this moment. All right. So the malate gets shuttled to a deeper part of the leaf, which is where the bundle sheath cells are, right? So the bottom cell here is the bundle sheath cell. And when the malate gets shuttled into the bundle sheath cell, then it can be decarboxylated. It can release the carbon dioxide that it's carrying from the more superficial cell, which is safe to do now because this is deep enough in the leaf that there isn't much oxygen. It's not near the surface where the air is. So now the carbon dioxide that's released from malate can just go ahead and enter the Calvin cycle as normal in this cell. In other words, it's going to be received by ribulose bisphosphate under the enzymatic help of Rubisco. But in this case, there's no oxygen to interfere with Rubisco, so it operates as a carboxylase instead of an oxygenase. And it's much more efficient that way. So you end up making a lot more sugar for the given amount of sunlight and CO2 that you have. Very, very worthwhile evolutionary adaptation. By the way, the whole thing operates as a cycle because malate, after it drops off at CO2, gets transformed into pyruvate, which comes back up, gets transformed into phosphoenolpyruvate to complete the cycle, and it just keeps... It's just a shuttle mechanism, basically. It's a spatial separation of processes. All right, now that's the final slide, but I don't have a slide for the other major group of plants that do get around this problem of photorespiration, but a different way. Those plants are called CAM plants, which is an acronym for crassulation acid metabolism. Now, crassulation is spelled just like it sounds. CRASSULACEAN. And it gets that name only because that's the group of plants in which it was discovered, but they're not the only plants that do it. Anyway, CAM plants, which include cacti, for instance, familiar examples. Not all cacti, but many cacti are CAM plants. CAM plants, though, the CAM mechanism evolved in plants that have to tolerate very sunny and dry conditions, hot and arid desert plants, largely. Well, the problem here is that in a desert, by definition, there isn't much water, right? And so a plant does not want to keep its stomata open any more than it has to, because it's an opening not only to let CO2 in, which is why it wants to has to have it open sometime. It's also an opening that lets water out. And water is at an extraordinary premium in the desert, especially when it's hot during the day, because water is really leaving then. Okay? Because hot air can hold a lot more water vapor, and so the gradient gets increased. So CAM plants actually open up their stomata only at night, and they keep them closed entirely during the day. Now, this wouldn't work for a conventional plant, right? Because in a conventional plant, you're running the light-dependent reactions and the light-independent reactions at the same time. Calvin cycle has to be running at the same time that the energy transduction reactions are occurring. So that means during the day when the sun is shining. Well, that's when you need the CO2, in other words. So you'd have to have those stomata open during the day. Wouldn't work. Here's how they get around it, though. They keep them closed during the day so that they can serve as much water as possible. During the day, of course, is the only time, though, in any plant that you can have light energy captured for the light-dependent reactions. So the light-dependent reactions are occurring during the day. Calvin cycle, though, is not. This is kind of a variation on what a C4 plant does. So this added step that C4 plant has is nicknamed the Hatch-Slack cycle. Obviously, that's an eponymous name. And a very similar thing is happening in a CAM plant, except it doesn't have separate kinds of cells. Instead, in a CAM plant, there's a temporal separation of processes. All right? So during the day, the light is shining. During the night, the stomata are open. Now, when the stomata are open, the CO2 is coming in, right? The CO2 gets incorporated into malate in a CAM plant as well. But that malate then gets pumped actively, of course, into a vacuole, so where it really accumulates. And it's, like I said, malate is malic acid that's been deprotonated. So it really makes that interior of the vacuole very acidic, and this is why they're called crassulation acid metabolism plants. But that's still a storage of the CO2, right? And then, during the day, next morning, it closes them off. So no more CO2 is coming in, which is no problem. But also no O2 is coming in either. And that's when the malate that's stored in the vacuole can liberate its CO2 a little bit at a time throughout the day while the light reactions are working to use that CO2 in the Calvin cycle to actually make the sugar. Does that make sense? So see how it's a temporal separation rather than two different spaces? It's day and night versus place A and place B. Yeah. Well, see, I didn't give you examples of C4 plants. Many grasses are C4 plants, like corn, for instance, which is why it can outproduce typical C3 plants. But, yeah, just by looking at them, not really, unless you know families of plants really well. Okay, that's one chapter. If there aren't any questions on those final two slides.